The Ticket. Podcasts are brought to you in part by Lewis Jewelers, the official jeweler of The Ticket and proud partner of Michigan Athletics.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. So, EA, we had a discussion last week about who's the best in the game right now. Understanding that if you choose one, it doesn't mean the other one is a bum. Right, it just means that you're talking about two elite guys, Joe Burrow and Pat Mahomes. Pat Mahomes has worn that crown for years now, and this is still, even if you said Joe Burrow is performing the best in the game right now, I still would say that Pat Mahomes is more talented. But Pat Mahomes had the ball last in that game, EA, and upon winning, he said it was a shot at the Cincinnati mayor. It was a shot at people calling it Burrowhead. It was a shot at anyone who disrespected. They said, get this man his respect. Anyone who thought that Pat Mahomes still wasn't number one. He put his team on his shoulder, and he got it done.
Yeah, I want to do a media culpa here. I was swayed by what I saw Burrow going into Buffalo with that swagger.
Me too.
And just owning
me
the Bills.
Too. Me too. Me too.
Bills, yeah. I thought the Bills were the best team. I thought that all the way through. I looked at the schedule from the beginning of the season, and I didn't see any losses on the Bills' schedule that are obvious losses. So I thought that they were far and away the best team. I carried that through the season, even though I was very worried about their secondary. And Burrow just trashed them. And it wasn't even close. And to me, that was resounding. And nothing against Mahomes and the Chiefs, but I just felt that they were not as convincing throughout the course of the season. I was worried about the loss of Tyreek Hill. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has not been, I think, what a lot of people hoped or thought. Not all his fault, but I think that that's pretty much accurate. So I was on this Burrow bandwagon last week. I think part of it is the Burrow way, his charm, his swagger. I think that convinces a lot of people, the media, myself included. And Mahomes, to his credit, he doesn't really talk big game like that. He doesn't talk trash. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't have the cigars. And it's not, I'm not clowning Burrow for, I think it's great that he has personality. I think it's fantastic. I love it. I think it adds to the game. I think it contributes to his leadership. But Mahomes is just more understated, or you could say bland, depending on your opinion. He's just more of a straight arrow in terms of how he talks and how he works the press. And I think that people like myself in the media are a little bit more swayed sometimes when you have the big talker who does back it up. And so I'm not less impressed with Burrow. Like you said, they're both incredible players. And I think that the ultimate test for the Lions is whether they can beat either of these guys or Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. I give credit to Mahomes. He must have been tempted along the way to just sort of say something like what Travis Kelce did, or just bite back a little bit. He hadn't done it, and he just proved it on the field. And I think he shut a lot of people up, including me.
Yeah. See, I don't, I guess I don't see it that way. I think that anyone making that comparison was also saying that this is one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever do it, he being Pat Mahomes. He is still elite. We're talking about, comparing a Lamborghini to a Ferrari. I mean, it's not a Lamborghini to a Chevette. I mean, no one's calling Pat Mahomes a bum. But what I saw, and what I still see, in Joe Burrow is a guy who, in his evolution as a quarterback, it can beat you in every way. He can, and he's not a runner per se, but he can scramble for a few yards. But what I mean is the thing that kind of separated him from Pat Mahomes a little bit is that Pat Mahomes was always a guy hunting for the big play. He is, and he's sort of tamed that a little bit. Whereas Joe Burrow, and watching him in his growth as a quarterback, you can see him always kind of find what the defense was giving him. A little more to a point where, you know what? I think he had the edge at this point in the comparison. I think that game came down to who had the ball last, EA, frankly. It came down to whoever had the ball last was going to win. And in this particular instance, Pat Mahomes making a great play, a great scramble with an unbelievably unfortunate personal foul penalty at the end to put him in field goal range, put him over the top. And so I don't think that doesn't settle the argument for me that he won the game. It just convinces me even more that these two guys are above the rest and they're really neck and neck at this point.
I'm with you, but still, I mean, Mahomes has won an MVP. Mahomes has won a Super Bowl. Burrow hasn't done those things yet. Granted, he's younger. And I really am enchanted with how Burrow plays for all the reasons I said last week and all the reasons you're saying now. And I think that there is every chance that in 3 or 4 years, we're going to be talking about Burrow as the greatest player, the greatest quarterback in the game. But I also think that there's, that media sort of does this, the new fancy shiny object. I mean, when I talk to my students, I say journalism is a study of change, and Burrow is more of a recent change than Mahomes. And I think sometimes, we're all a little bit too clued into the new thing. And again, what you said is true. I don't take any, this loss doesn't do anything to lower Burrow in my high estimation of him. I just think that watching that and seeing Mahomes pull it out, make the clutch play, and then seeing his resume, which is still what it is, I think that I sort of scaling Mahomes a little higher than I probably should have last week while not lowering Burrow.
Yeah, man. Hey, well, here's the factor that you mentioned last week that you didn't mention today. Think about the final four teams and the weak link amongst all the units. And this was the consensus, was the Kansas City defense, right? Kansas City defense was, the thing that people pointed to was like, I don't know if that really stacks up to the rest. And yet they get in this game, they sacked Joe Burrow 5 times and hit him 12 more. He was under fire like he always is. He is always getting hit, always getting punched, always getting punished because they can't pass block to save their lives. And yet that guy still has him right there knocking on the doorstep game after game.
I agree, but you could also come back and say, well, Burrow's still on his rookie contract. Mahomes is not. And Mahomes is good enough so that he can overcome some of these things and still get paid. Is Burrow still going to have Chase and Higgins and all those guys? Are they going to be able to build around him and build an offensive line around him when he's paid? And I think that that's a feather in Mahomes' cap, as much as it, if you look at it that way. They have to protect Burrow. And, I mean, you can say that too, and I that is what you're saying, that basically if he had an offensive line the way the Chiefs have or a lot of other teams, including the Lions, had, then what happens? That's a valid argument. But I think that Mahomes, by having that contract, he has done what Russell Wilson couldn't, because they paid Russell Wilson and then the other team fell away and they've paid Mahomes. And to this point, that has not happened at Kansas City.
Gotcha. All right. So let's look at this matchup because before we get off this game, Pat Mahomes for the entire game basically moved around the pocket, right? And it was almost like he was saving it, EA. It was almost like, I know there's going to come a moment when I got to get out of this, where I got to run this football. And I can't be doing it throughout the game, because if I do, it's probably going to sap me for whatever happens after that. So I'm going to save it. And at the right moment, at a moment where it seemed like to me Cincinnati wasn't expecting it, he gets out of the pocket and runs for a first down. Now, it does not put him in field goal range, but the penalty at the end put him in field goal range, put him close enough to get the game winner. But the play that got him there was an amazing play considering his health by Pat Mahomes.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Yeah, well, I also want to say that it's so sort of a teachable moment that, you know, when one of your, at any level of sports, when one of your teammates is crying by himself on the bench, you know, you kind of should go over to him and, like, huddle around him. I thought Osai was on his own way too long in that situation. Yeah, I know he made a mistake, and I guess you could say he cost him the game in that time. That kind of bothered me. Now, I know afterwards, he had a little bit more support in the locker room. But shoot, you know, people are going to make mistakes. If they obviously feel terrible about it, pick them up. I think that that's something that we could all learn from that moment. But yeah, I mean, Mahomes, who knows how hurt he really is. And his game is based not just on throwing, obviously, but being able to throw on the run. So, I mean, I don't want to elevate or downgrade any other quarterback, but the thing is, like, remember Ben Roethlisberger, whenever he had any kind of injury, like, you knew about it all the time. And I think a lot of players, a lot of athletes, they will admit or talk about the injuries they have, which is their right. They should. They're in more pain than I can even imagine. But again, Mahomes is not going to talk about that so much. And I think that a lot of times we don't really understand how much pain he's in because he's not talking about it. And his teammates aren't talking about it. I know it's easy to say, well, they just gave him a needle or whatever. They gave him this painkiller. He was fine. I just don't think that's true. I think that he overcame a lot more than we realize. And we just might never hear about it.
Yeah, you had one teammate who like a background player offer some criticism in the locker room. He since offered an apology, but I felt for Osai as well, because he had played a really good game. That's the thing.
Yeah.
He had played a really good game, and you also get how defensive players are kind of in no man's land when it comes to the side, especially with quarterbacks going to the sideline, right? You see quarterbacks, they run toward the sideline, and then they sort of fake like they're going out, and then they get a couple of extra yards up the field. They do it all the time. And so, you know, there's this feeling for a defensive player, like you got to make sure that they get out of bounds. Just in that situation, you got to know or process quick enough that he's trying to get out of bounds. Like, he can't afford to go too far upfield. He might go a couple yards, but he's not going to go 10, 15. So let him go, because, you know, they got to stop the clock. And he just didn't process that fast enough, unfortunately. I wonder what you think about the idea that Ira mentioned yesterday. He said, how about, like, you have roughing the kicker or running into the kicker, it's 5 yards for running into but 15 for roughing. What if there's a similar judgment call for sideline plays where, you know, you see that it's one is just very malicious and, you know, it's a personal foul. The other one, he gave a guy a push because he was right on the borderline between, hey, he might go up the field, he has a foot out of bounds, or just got out of bounds, and you push him, that's a 5-yard penalty. How would you feel about that?
I like that idea, but the problem there is that, you know, if you just sort of give him a shove while he's a foot out of bounds, and then he falls into the bench, and then he's seriously hurt, then that's going to indicate the penalty. It's sort of the result rather than the just the nature of the shove. I think in that situation, it's sort of unintended consequences. That then how do you decide? And then there's going to be arguments and reviews over that. And I think that the goal here in this era is just to protect the quarterback as much as possible. And so you're going to have some lighter calls that if it was some other player, it wouldn't happen. And that's just the world we live in now. I actually think it's a good thing. But I think that even though the idea is good, you're going to get into a situation where depending on, I mean, I guess they have this in the NHL too. I mean, if you draw blood, then it's a bigger penalty, even if it was not necessarily a dangerous high stick move. So I guess in some ways the NHL already does it, but in the NFL, I think that you're just sort of asking for more reviews, more arguments, and more referees that are hesitating in the moment.
All right. So this Super Bowl matchup, we kind of talked about it earlier, but like I said, going into this game, I feel like the quarterback injury that is more problematic is, you know, Jalen Hurts' injury. And that, to me, tips the scales in favor of Kansas City, but you sounds like you disagree.
Yeah, I like the Eagles in this. I think that they're I mean, again, it's just what we talked about a minute ago. It's just Mahomes now has experience that Hurts doesn't have. I think that matters. I think I'm not sure who covers Kelsey. And, man, by the way, I know I'm beating a dead horse, but it is painful to see Darius Slay, who's now going to be in the Super Bowl. Condre Diggs was making a big play in the playoffs. I mean, I realize that you can't undo the sort of sliding doors here. But, I mean, if the Lions had these guys still, they might be one of these games. I know I'm going off topic. The Super Bowl will come down to, in my opinion, how you defend, I mean, really both Kelseys. That's going to be the overplayed storyline, but it matters. How you defend Travis Kelce. If you defend Travis Kelce effectively, I think you win the game. I think that they have enough players, the Eagles do, who can play in space and keep him off the board. But if Kelce is able to run free and do his thing, it's going to be a long day for the Eagles. I do think they're going to be able to stop him, though.
Yeah. Little NBA, EA, just a little bit. You think this is the last year for Dwayne Casey? Do you think it should be? I asked that question because, you know, just talking to some basketball folks, you know, there have been some names being tossed around as hey, this guy should be, Pistons should look at this guy as if to say that there are rumblings that the Pistons might not be might not be pleased enough to continue with Dwayne Casey. On the flip side, he is dealing without his best player with a very, very young roster. Everyone knows it's a rebuild. How do you judge him in this season given those circumstances?
Yeah, I really like him. I always have. I just don't see it. I mean, I don't see what the team is not playing cohesively. Even when Cade was in there, I didn't see a lot of improvement. I'm watching the Magic every night. The Magic, I think, are even younger. They had a bushel full of injuries to top players. You still see what they're doing. You still see the plan. It's a little bit like, to me, it's a little bit like the Tommy Amica era, which is like, he's a very likable coach, a very bright coach. But when you on the court, it wasn't clear what the strategy was. And only when Beeline got there was it pretty clear what the team was trying to do in a certain moment. And that's kind of how I feel about Casey. When I watch the Pistons, it just feels like it's talent against talent. And when the talent's there, they lose. And there doesn't seem to be enough value added where I'm saying you've got to give him one more year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do. This is about, you know, trying to develop the young guys and at the same time hoping for a little lottery luck. But, you know, you felt like they were going to be movers in free agency in the offseason, and yet that wasn't the case. How do you feel about, you know, Alec Burks and Bojan Bogdanović? There's a market for them. Do you hold on to those guys, anticipating next year being a year where maybe you can be a team that challenges for a play? I mean, look, pie in the sky, but that's what we thought this year was going to be, right? That this would be a team that contended for the last playoff spot. Do you keep those two in anticipation of being in that position next year, or do you try to mortgage them right now for some draft capital?
Man, that's tough. That's tough. How old is Bogdanović?
I think Bojan is 31 or 32. I'll get it for you real quick. Get it for you real quick.
See, that's tough because, you know, I hate the tanking thing, but if you ship him, then you're a little closer to getting Wemby, maybe, or Scoot. And those are game-changing players.
He's 33.
Said,
he's 33.
33. So that said, if they are restored and they get – they're going to get a good pick, even if it's not the top two. Then the problem is – or I shouldn't say the problem, but the challenge is that they get to next year, they have the talent, but they're just a bunch of young guys. You know, you're really asking Cade to be the veteran in that locker room in his, what, second year, third year? Really his second year injury. That's a lot. And a new coach, probably. So I think that if you have some kind of veteran leadership next year, I think that you try to be a seller. But I am nervous about having, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-old. I mean, Duren's the youngest guy in the league right now, right?
Right. Yes,
and,
he is.
And he, yeah. Yeah. So he's the... And now he's like one of the leaders on the team. I'm not saying that it's going to be chaos, but if you are hoping to maybe contend for playoff spot based on the talent next year, I think you have to have some kind of veteran presence in the locker room. I don't know if that's the case now, but I worry that it won't be the case even if they get, you know, a Wemby or a Scoot next year.
Yeah, yep, yep. Hopefully on the Wemby sweepstakes, they come out on top, right?
Yeah.
We'll
yeah.
see. And a healthy Cade. Come back, I guess he had been dealing with that injury since, you know, at the end of his high school career. So maybe this will be even better physically when he comes back next season. We can hope, right? EA, as always, my friend, a wealth of knowledge and perspective. We appreciate your time, and we will talk to you again next week.
By the way, the Wagners, they had almost 40 last night. They beat Philly. I know you guys are interested up there. keep paying attention. Those guys, I mean, I know you got to go, but they're so interesting to watch, the two of them, because they're such different personalities on the court, and they bring such different things. But Mo is sneaky good at what he does, and you saw that last night. He kind of... Nothing is Banchero because he's fantastic, but I mean, Mo kind of was X factor last night, and he's doing that a lot more. He's kind of coming into his own now.
Yeah, Paolo is playing well. He's playing really, really, yep. really well, and justifying.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
That pick, but Franz, he's showing why. Remember, I told you before that draft, it's like, man, yeah. they were talking about drafting him with their top first round pick. What is it, like three or four? I think it was four. And he wound up staying on the board, and they got him. And man, Franz is averaging like 20 points a game now?
He's always defending the best player on the other guy. He's always the. And no disrespect to Banchero, he's like the franchise. But I got to give you credit. I mean, the two takes that you had in the last couple of years that always I think about all the time are that Franz, you said, because when they got Suggs, I was like, oh, well, of course they got Suggs, and Franz is just a bonus. But Franz is like their glue and still underrated. I think he's going to be an all-star for several years. And then the Sauce Gardner, that was genius. You were spot on with that. I mean, he probably should be Defensive Rookie of the Year. No disrespect to Aiden, but he's fantastic. I know he plays in New York and gets the credit, blah, blah, blah. But that was a great call by you, and I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, appreciate
19.9 points per game, by the way, for Franz. So not quite 20. Right, but so if you want to round up, he's averaging 20.
Franz is balling down there. All right. EA, appreciate you, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. See you guys.
All right, that is Eric Adelson. Folks, before we go, listen, get on board with Brighton Ford by going to brightonford.com. Call 1-800-NEW-FORD. Make it out to the lot at 8240 West Grand River Avenue in Brighton, Michigan. That's where John Cuter and his crew will take great care of you with great deals like the one on the 2023 Ford Bronco Sport Big Bend. $370 a month with $4,500 down or $543 a month with $500 down. The 2022 Ford Explorer four-wheel drive XLT, still a few on the lot, $304 per month with $5,900 down, $536 a month with $500 down. And last but not least, that 2022 Ford F-150 Super Crew, $349 a month with $5,900 down, $585 a month with $500 down. For those and other great deals, get on board with Brighton Ford by going to brightonford.com. Call 1-800-NEW-FORD or make it out to the lot at 8240 West Grand River Avenue in Brighton, Michigan. We'll see you tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK of the Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.